Welcome to the Learning Languages and Society with Gabby podcast, where it's all about the fascinating world of languages and culture. Let's rock.
Hi, everybody. My name is Gabby, and today we're going to talk about attitudes to language. I have to say that I'm sorry for the small hiatus that I have allowed myself to take. I know it's been longer than usual. I was dealing with some personal issues which kept me away from podcasting, but I have now sorted things out, and here I am again with more content to offer. Today I'm going to talk about attitudes to language, which is the final nail in the coffin of our episodes comprised in social linguistics, and here we go. Now, people seem to have expectations in regards to language usage. One example of this is the film Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, in which Sean Connery played Lionheart with his own Scottish accent, which apparently seemed really odd to part of the audience, understandably, I have to say. Likewise, Kevin Costner's non-British accent in his role as Robin Hood in the same film was also much commented. Well, people in general, it seems, have expectations, right, when they watch a film. So they expect this Englishman to sound English, which is, by the way, a mistake because no one spoke English at the time the same way they do nowadays. So basically, we wouldn't be able to understand the royal version of English. Nevertheless, most people expected them to sound English. This has happened countless times in other films and series. For instance, the film Gladiator, in which actors speak English, or the famous Netflix series Vikings, in which they also speak English. Now, wouldn't it be beautiful if actors learned Latin or Old Norse to make us happy? Can you imagine people speaking Latin in Gladiator or speaking Old Norse in Vikings? That would be awesome. It sure would be fantastic, but learning a new language, obviously, would be too hard a job to do for a film. So, no. Now, people hold attitudes to language at all levels. For example, if you speak with a certain accent or variety other than the mainstream in the wrong context, you might experience negative feedback. But if you use the same accent in a more favorable context, you might experience much support and love. So this is what sometimes happens to a lot of Americans when they travel to Britain or to England, which translates into negative feedback from people in general terms, right? They don't seem to appreciate American accents in the United Kingdom. So it's just an example, right? Now, pronunciation and punctuation can get you in trouble as well. For example, if you pronounce a certain word wrong or if you spell it wrong in the public eye, you will surely be deemed as illiterate and worthless of attention, even if what you say has some truth to it. Okay? So pronouncing words in a certain type of way, the intonation with which you pronounce words, even if you're expressing the truth, even if what you're saying is 100% true, you might get negative feedback nevertheless, right? So that's how we know there's certain tendencies to have certain attitudes to certain types of pronunciations, right? Punctuation is the same, right? You might write a beautiful poem with gorgeous content in it, but if the punctuation or the spelling is wrong, then, you know, you're not going to get very far in the public eye anyway. Now, the choice of words you make is also important. Some words are expensive and they can cost you your job or reputation in the wrong context. Some words are key to success and freedom, however, in other contexts. For instance, speaking about science or scientific research in a very feminist gathering could generate the wrong type of attention from the audience. In the same setting, however, using the word equality, equity, pay gap would generate a very positive response from the same audience. Words such as resilience or tolerance are trendy and cool. They hold tremendous power in the media and national political institutions, so they're cool to use. to be used, but they carry a tremendous ideological baggage as well. They don't simply mean what they mean, if you know what I mean. All words, as we see, are not created equal. Stereotypes are cognitive shortcuts. If you meet a German man whose name happens to be Adolf, you may have second thoughts about spending too much time with your new friend. If you, however, meet the same man and you find out that his name is Friedrich, for example, then nothing should make him suspicious. Okay, this is a silly example, but it's just for you to understand what the dynamics are here. Okay, let's move on. Grammar can be also a source of much pain. For instance, using double negatives in English can evoke the wrong attitudes towards the speaker. Things like, I don't know nothing about it, can automatically exclude you to become friends with a more socioeconomic privileged group of people. Even if double negatives are found across many varieties of American and British English and across many languages in the world, this stereotype persists, right? People don't like to hear things like, I don't know nothing about it. It just doesn't sound right, right? And is immediately, let's say, relegated to poorer social classes. That's just how it is. Okay, some stereotypes about languages can be quite harsh, especially minority languages, right? So language as a whole can be deemed as suspicious or not worthy of attention. Speaking about physics in a language such as Welsh or Asturian could strike people as odd, since most people regard these languages as not suited to hold such topics because of a lack of vocabulary and sophistication, presumably, right? So they would rather have you speak about physics in English and or maybe Spanish rather than, you know, for example, Welsh or Cornish or Asturian or something like that. You're right? Okay, code switching. Code switching can be also very controversial in its own right. For instance, switching from Spanish to Catalan, where I live, can serve as a proof of respect to some people. And I will give you an example to illustrate this a little bit better. Now, there is a bakery near my house where I like to buy myself a special snack called ensaimada de chocolate. For those who do not know what it is a traditional sweet pastry filled with chocolate and powdered sugar. It's so good, and at the said bakery, they really know how to make it, okay? So it's really good. So I usually go there to buy it. Now, I have noticed that most of the customers speak Catalan while ordering, and so do all the shop assistants as well, right? I've passed by several times and I have ordered in Spanish only to see the shop assistant answering back in Catalan again and again until I realize that I have to switch to Catalan and finish my order in Catalan, which is not a problem, by the way. I think it's fine. Now, the interesting thing came the other day when I ordered in Spanish to one of the shop assistants, and she answered in Spanish. And so we kept the small exchange in Spanish until the end. The next time I went by, however, to order, I was welcomed by a different shop assistant. And now this time I ordered in Spanish, but she answered back in Catalan. So I proceeded to say something else in Spanish, but I noticed that she answered once again in Catalan. And that's when I decided to code switch, and I went from Spanish to Catalan, and I just finished the order with a small chit-chat about how delicious and addictive the chocolate pastries they make are. Now, the previous shop assistant, that is the one that I had spoken to in Spanish the previous times I went by, was also there, and she surely looked puzzled and disappointed when she realized that I also spoke Catalan and that I was speaking Catalan with that other woman, okay? She seemed displeased to see that with me, she now had to speak Spanish only, while with the other shop assistants, I would hold the small conversations in Catalan. Now, clearly, at this bakery, linguistic politics matter. It is a bakery with a small twitch of Catalan ideology. Not saying it's bad, but it's just what it is. All right. Now, we are certain that we as humans learn attitudes. Two important sources of attitudes are our personal experiences and our social environment, including the media. Okay, so social media or the media in general, television, radio, and so on. There is observational learning, which involves noticing the behavior of other people and the consequences of that behavior. Another one is instrumental learning, where we attend to the consequences of attitudes and whether these bring rewards or detriments. Attitudes have three components. So cognition, effect, and behavior. Attitudes are cognitive because they comprise beliefs about the world. For example, making a link between speaking a standard variety with a high status job. Attitudes are affective because they do come with certain feelings about something in particular. The behavioral part of attitudes mean that a person might act or behave in a certain way depending on the attitude. You're right? So just to illustrate this a little further, when I said that making a link between speaking a standard variety with a high status job, what I mean is that if you hear somebody speaking the standard variety of your language in a very formal way, you would probably link this person to somebody holding a job in a high status job, such as a surgeon or a lawyer, for example, or even a politician, right? Which you would probably not grant the same kind of thought to someone who's speaking a non-standard variety of your own language, for example, a language which is only spoken within the region you are from, or maybe a language which is not considered to have much value or social value in general terms, right? Now, when I say attitudes are affective because they do come with a certain feeling about something in particular, that's what I mean. When people act in a certain way because of what they think or they believe, there's also a feeling to it. So you can really tell they're feeling something. So this is the case when some British people hear someone say something with a very American accent. Now they can have, they some of them could probably think or feel in a way that is not probably very positive sometimes, right? So that sort of feeling comes ingrained with that affective attitude, all right? Now, the behavioral part of attitudes, as I said before, mean that a person might act or behave in a certain way depending on the attitude, okay? So basically, as it follows, somebody might be nicer or less nice with you or with somebody else just based on that perception that they first had about the particular speech or language usage of that person, all right? So that's how we know, right? Now, there are other terms related to attitudes that we need to consider. We can consider, for example, habits. So habits are learned and are stable and enduring. Habits are primarily behavioral, and attitudes are not primarily behavioral. So that would be a difference. And people are usually more aware of their attitudes than habits. They can talk about them and try to change them. So you can, for example, be aware that you have a certain attitude when somebody has an American accent, for example. And you can be aware of that, and maybe you can try to change that sort of behavior towards that person, right? While with a habit, that's a little bit different because they're not primarily behavioral. You don't notice them as much. They're more mechanic, I would say. Okay, we have values as well. Values are more global than attitudes. They are also, to me, the most important and central element in a person, system of attitudes and beliefs. So values really are important. They are the core of a human being, in a way, right? There are terminal values such as freedom or equality, and instrumental values such as being honest. So they may generate different attitudes. For example, if you feel about a certain way about freedom, for example, you may choose a specific political party rather than a different one, right? And then we have beliefs. Now, beliefs trigger important affective reactions as well. Okay, so the things that you believe really do matter because they make you feel and they make you act in a certain way, in a specific way. Opinions and attitudes are interchangeable often, and opinions are verbal, while attitudes may convey verbal and nonverbal processes. Okay, so when somebody voices their opinion about a certain specific matter, they want to talk about accents or how somebody sounds when they're speaking with a different accent, that's an opinion and it's verbal. Now, attitudes are a little bit different because they're not verbalized. You may act in a way that conveys a significance or conveys meaning, but you may not actually voice out what you actually feel or think. You know, it just shows in the way you behave what you think. You're right. So that's the difference between opinions and attitudes to that regard. Now, we have something called social stereotypes. Now, the basis for stereotyping is social categorization, which means dividing the world into social groups. That's what we do as human beings. In order to understand reality in a bit better, we tend to divide the world in different social groups. So classifying individuals as members of social groups on the basis that they share certain features of a particular group, okay? So sometimes we tend to exaggerate the differences between social groups so that we can tell them apart and distinguish them. And we can sometimes try to pretend that the differences we have between people belonging to the same group are not that different, okay? Because otherwise we would have to recategorize everything again, so that's not good. So our brains do not want to work that way, so we need to make those distinctions clear, all right? This can include different aspects in society. So there are, as I said, there are certain features of a particular group. Now, this can include different aspects in society, such as ethnicity, profession, age, nationality, preferred sports, preferred cards, etc. It can be a wider range of things, right? It can include features such as how skilled or how trustworthy someone from a particular group is. So, for example, you can have a social stereotype about people from a certain ethnicity, the way they behave, act, and so on and so forth. So, in turn, your behavior, your actions, and your overall attitudes to that specific person go one way, right? So, if you hear someone who happens to be an Afro-American, for example, and you hear this person talking over the phone, or you hear somebody from India talking over the phone, or you hear someone with a very strong, let's say, French accent over the phone, you may have a different response or a different attitude to that person over the phone. So that's what it means. Profession also. So we have social stereotypes for profession. It's not the same being a surgeon, as I said before, or being a lawyer, or being or having, you know, holding a high status job than, you know, basically doing some other type of labor, you know, which may not be a blue collar job or something like that. You know what I mean? Age would be a big one as well. People who tend to be under the age of 30 are treated in a different way often than people, for example, in their 40s or 50s. And not to mention, obviously, people who are elderly and acting in a different way. So we would probably have a stereotype regarding those people. So if you heard somebody speak over the phone, speaking slowly and with a certain type of let's say in a manner in which you can tell that person is over, I don't know, 60 or 70 years old, well, you would talk to that person in a different way. Okay. Nationality is also a big one. Depending on where you come from or what passport you hold, you are treated one way or another. But there's a different array of things as well. Preferred sports, somebody who prefers, swimming and sports that deal with water, well, they're treated in a different way sometimes depending on the context than those who prefer football or something like that. Or maybe even those who prefer, you know, sports that are more related to the elites, for example, golf, playing golf or something like that, okay? Also, your preferred cars, for example, somebody who likes small European cars, for example, and somebody who prefers, you know, one of those big cars that we often see in the highways or in American films, for example, okay? All right, let's move on to ideology. Well, what is ideology? Although social stereotypes and ideology have been mentioned in the same sentence, the concepts come from different traditions. While social stereotypes originate from the field of social psychology, the notion of language ideology mainly emanates from linguistic anthropology. Ideology comprises a patterned but naturalized set of assumptions and values about how the world works, a set which is associated with a particular social or cultural group, okay? So an example of this would be right-wing politics as being related to wealthier social classes and left-wing politics as related to nanny states. So, understanding stereotypes through language can be quite slippery and not straightforward or transparent because there's so many components of reality that merge into social stereotyping that it's really difficult to actually define it. Although, obviously, you know, we can tell when somebody has an ideology, you can tell that person holds that certain attitude and ideology just by the way they talk or even the words they use, you know. Like I said before, if you talk about tolerance, resilience, inclusion, so on and so forth, migration and so on and so forth, you may sort of categorize that person on the political spectrum of the left, right? But if you hear somebody talking about more traditional values, such as family, you know, the sense of belonging to your country, your nation, etc. Well, then we would probably categorize that person on the right hand of the political spectrum, so a right wing person, perhaps, or somebody more conservative. Anyways, so there you go. That was the last nail in the coffin. With that, we finish this little set of episodes in social linguistics. I'm going to try to do in the next following days in order to catch up with you guys more content. So we're going to move on to a whole different array of subjects in languages and society. All right, guys, thank you for listening to me, and please do not forget to subscribe. Love you all. Bye-bye.